And what I'm going to do over the next 5 weeks is offer the basic instructions for mindfulness practice. And it's something that I love to do. I've been doing it for many years, and seemingly each new time I do it, I like it more. And it's partly because it's something I love a lot. I love the mindfulness practice, I love attention, I love meditation, and it's wonderful to share that with people. And also, that's the main reason. The other thing I was going to say is that I'm also listening to myself to see if I can surprise myself. There's something new will come out of my mouth as I do this introductory course. There's so many different ways of doing an introductory course, so many different angles for doing it. So I'm curious what will come this time. So a little bit about me, for those of you who might not know me. I have been practicing Buddhist meditation practices for about 30 years. And I practiced for a long time in the Zen tradition. And in fact, was ordained as a Zen priest and spent time in Japan practicing there. And then I went to Southeast Asia, where I was introduced to Vipassana, which is a tradition we teach here. And Vipassana is the Pali word, a Buddhist word, that means basically means insight. It means clear seeing, emphatic seeing. And so what we practice here is cultivating our ability for insight, or to see deeply, see clearly. And then when I came to this area in 1990, I was asked to teach a small meditation group that met in Palo Alto. And so I was happy to do that, and that group grew. Until now, 4 years ago, we moved here, and we have a center here, and probably most of you have seen this newsletter and seen all the things that we do here. That's a little bit my background. Now I'd like to ask for you a little bit. How many of you are brand new to meditation? Welcome. And how many of you are have done meditation before but are new to this particular form of meditation? Welcome also. And those of you who have done other forms of meditation, what are some of the main forms of meditation you've done? Nice to hear.
Zazen.
Huh?
Zazen.
Zazen. Someone else?
Kriya.
Kriya, so like more Hindu yoga?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Great. Anybody else? So the meditation practice that the primary meditation practice that we do here at our center, the mindfulness meditation or the insight meditation, is actually a very easy practice in concept, in principle. It's a very easy practice. It's the practice of paying attention. And it's something that is not particularly exotic, paying attention. It's not mystical, or it's not particular. The mystical East doesn't have a monopoly on paying attention. It's something that my dear mother told me to do when I was a kid, and I figure that maybe it's my karma for not listening to her that I have to do this as an adult. Pay attention, Gil. And it's basically a practice of paying attention. It's in some ways it's deceptively simple, because we all do it all the time, paying attention. So what is it so special about paying attention that we give so much emphasis on it? In the Buddhist tradition, the practice of paying mindful attention to our experience as it happens is considered to be the most essential practice for liberation, for awakening. There was a story in Japan of a arrogant, wealthy businessman or government bureaucrat who went to a Zen master and brought with him a beautiful piece of silk paper and beautiful ink, and asked the Zen master to compose some calligraphy. And as one of the things Zen masters in Japan sometimes do is they do calligraphy, and they give out these pieces of paper to people to put on their walls. And So the businessman asked the Zen master to, in this piece of paper, to capture the essence of Buddhism, the deepest, most profound truth of Buddhism, to somehow write that in some, you know, in Japanese characters, Chinese characters, and calligraphy. And so the Zen master said, "Oh, great." So he took the piece of paper, and with a kind of full intentness that a Zen master can do, just really present, just there for that one activity, he wrote down the character for attention. And he handed the paper to the man. And the man said, "Oh, no, you don't seem to understand. I want the deepest, most profound truth of Buddhism." And then the Zen master said, "Oh, now I understand, okay." So he took another piece of paper. And so then he, very intently present, he wrote the characters, "Attention, attention." And the man said, "I'm an important man, I don't have much time, I want something important for me to get the essence of Buddhism, the profound truth of the Buddha, and this ancient tradition that goes back all these thousands of years, and I need a really the essential profundity, the highest truth." "Oh, so, okay." And so he took a third piece of paper, and so then he wrote, "Attention, attention, attention." So attention is not something uniquely Buddhist, and some of you might not care at all about Buddhism. I'll probably be mentioning various Buddhist things and Buddhist references as we go along here, but I would like to, at the beginning of this course, to make it clear that the practice of mindfulness is not limited by Buddhism, doesn't depend on Buddhism, and you're welcome to just ignore anything that has to do with the B word if you don't like it. And it's not inherently necessary for touching into the power and the strength of what attention can do. So why is it that attention, paying attention, is so significant? If you asked it a little different way, what is it like when we're not paying attention? And if we pay attention to not paying attention, probably we'll find out that human beings, you yourself, spend much of your time not being that attentive to what's happening in the present moment. There's a little cliche that says people are so distracted by distractions, they don't even know they're distracted. We're so caught up, we don't even know we're caught up. So it's very easy to spend a lot of time in the future tripping, planning a lot in the mind, imagining the future. It's easy to spend a lot of time in the past, rehashing the past, trying to have a better past. Someone once said, "Forgiveness is giving up all hope for a better past." You know, we're still hoping. You know, we spend a lot of time thinking about the past, or in fantasy. You know, lost in fantasy, or concerns, or in conversations, imaginary conversations with people, all kinds of things. And but to really have a kind of a high quality presence, to really be here for this event right now, as if this particular moment has value in and of itself. We don't have to be in a hurry to get beyond it or finish something, and so we can get on to some more important things. We don't have to be in a hurry to get through our to-do list. But to really kind of be here, relaxed, at peace, so we can really take in the fullness of this very moment here, is very rare. What happens, though, when you can really be here in a relaxed and full and present way, is that some of the most wonderful aspects of being a human being are more likely to happen to us. It's very hard to be filled with joy if your mind is thinking about the past and the future, or if you're caught up in some reactive mode to what's going on and you're preoccupied. It's very hard to feel love unless you're really in the present moment. It's very hard to feel peace unless you're really in the present moment. It's hard to have quality friendships with people or quality experiences of compassion unless we're really here, present in the present moment. And the more we spend our life not in the present moment, busy, rushing around, thinking, distracting ourselves, we make it a little bit harder for some of these high quality aspects of human life to be available to us. In Buddhist spirituality, the function or the purpose of present moment awareness is twofold. One is to discover a sense of deep sense of well-being and peace when we're present, not feeling in conflict with anything at all in the world. And that's possible, not to feel any conflict with ourselves internally, externally. For many people in the West, it's internal conflict, which is really kind of drives their anxiety or their suffering. But discover how to be present in a way that doesn't add any more suffering. The other function of the practice is, as we can stay in the present moment, is we actually see the present moment more deeply. And one of the premises of this practice is that most of us live in a world of thoughts and ideas. And the way that we experience the world is through the filter of what we think about things, how we think about the world. And it's very rare that we drop behind the curtains, the veil of our ideas, our concepts, and see more deeply what's really going on here. And I think many of you probably had the experience of someone judging you because they didn't really get to know, they haven't really known you. They kind of have a passing judgment. They assume, you know, you're that kind of person. And you feel, wait a minute, I'm much more than that. You know, how could you be so narrow in how you see me? Take the time to get to know me. It takes time to really see deeply into a human being, get to know them. And that's one example where we, you know, where our concepts or ideas are, can keep us from really seeing what's really here. And that's translated in many different ways in our life, many different ways over and over again in our life, where we don't really take the time to see things deeply and we have a superficial judgment or relationship to what's here. So in Buddhist practice, we try to stop. And then we try to see deeply. In the Chinese Buddhist tradition, now we're talking about the essential teachings of Buddhism, you know, how you can narrow it all down. Chinese Buddhism spent about 500-600 years digesting Buddhism. Buddhism came to China around the first century. And for the next 500 years, they tried to make sense of the huge wealth of Buddhism coming out of India. And it was a hard thing to do because of various reasons. And after about six centuries, they started... trying to summarize it all. And one summary of all of Buddhism, according to the Chinese tradition, is that awakening or freedom beckons us inside of everything. That there's some kind of freedom, some awakening, liberation, that's everything, every experience you have in the human life has like a little finger inside saying, come here, look at me really deeply. Be really present here, and you will find awakening. So part of the art of this practice is learning how to pay attention, how to pay attention well, and to whatever's going on, and to see where is the liberation, where's the freedom in this experience also. What this means is that in Buddhist tradition, we are very reluctant to turn away from anything. The idea of denying something or turning away or ignoring is not really very popular in Buddhism. Occasionally it's a wise thing to do. But rather, the idea in Buddhist practice is to really, I don't know if turning into things is exactly the right word, but to really, if something's happening, look at it, be present for it. Don't turn away. Don't close down. Don't run away. But also, don't grab onto it so tight that you stifle or suffocate the life in it. Another thing that the Chinese did, when they translated Buddhist technical terms into Chinese, they tended to do so in very simple terms. And so there's this word vipassana, which means insight or clear seeing. It's kind of a big word, vipassana. And then there's another word called samatha, and samatha is connected to samadhi. It means concentration. So insight and concentration are two big aspects of meditation practice. The Chinese translated these two terms by the words stop and look. And another thing my mother told me, Gil, stop and look. And so concentration is stopping. Concentration is somehow developing enough stability in mind, steadiness in mind, so you stop so you can really be present for what's here. And the insight is to look. And look what's here. Stop and look. So that's what we're going to practice these next 5 weeks, is stopping and looking, and look more deeply at what's actually here. You don't have to change your experience. You don't have to be different than who you are. You don't have to say that who you are is wrong or bad. What you're asked to do is, in a sense, is to look more deeply and see, what is your experience? Stop enough so you can notice, what is your experience of who you are? What's your experience of your life right now? And in doing that, discover some way of being free. That's my hope. Now, paying attention is very simple. You just pay attention. But in practice, it's not so easy. So what we do in this five-week course is we talk about what you can pay attention to in meditation systematically. So first, today, we'll talk about posture, and we'll talk about breath meditation. Next week, we'll expand the instruction to include paying attention to our physical body. The third week, we'll expand the instruction to also include, as part of the field of awareness, paying attention to our emotions. And the fourth week will include our thinking, our cognitive world, the world of our thoughts and ideas. And then the fifth week we do something a little bit more expansive, including talking about how to bring the practice out into daily life, into the rest of our life. The idea is, in theory, by the time you finish the 5 weeks, you have some idea about how to bring attention to any part of your human experience. But if I just say right now, pay attention to your experience, it might seem too much, there's too much going on. So we start the first week being very simple. Just pay attention to breath. And the breath is also very helpful because it's a great place to help us to calm us down. And the calmer we can be, the more clearly we can see. It also turns out that these different realms of attention, breath, body, emotions, and thought, support each other, or they build a foundation for each other. It's easier to pay attention to your body if you know how to pay good attention to your breath. It's easier to pay attention in a wise way to your emotional life if you know how to pay attention to your body. And it's easier to pay attention to your thinking world, your cognitive world, if you know how to pay attention to your emotions and your body. I think of it as a pyramid, with maybe like the breath and the body at the very bottom of the pyramid that provides the strong foundation. And then you have the emotions, and then you have the thoughts near the top of the pyramid. And thoughts, our thinking world, it kind of likes to think that it's special. And so we kind of say, it's fine, you can be the top of the pyramid. But if you turn a pyramid upside down, it's going to be very unstable. It's going to fall over. If we spend all our time in the world of our thoughts, and that's how we experience our whole life, our life becomes actually quite unstable, fragile. And so what we're trying to do in this mindfulness practice is to cultivate an awareness that allows us to have this broad foundation that gives our life stability, ballast, support, so that we're not pushed around so easily by the world of thoughts, ideas, the experiences of the world around us, but we have this, you know, good, strong foundation. So, some of you have heard, maybe, of the little meditation practice of imagining your bodies like a mountain, maybe like a pyramid or like a mountain. And it works really well when you sit cross-legged, because you have this nice, nice three-point base, and you kind of come up to a point up on top of your head. And imagine yourself like a mountain, so that you really have this broad stability and firmness, and you feel inhabited or embodied right here in the solidity of the mountain. It's a lot easier to feel equanimous if you really have the stability in your body. So the first thing we're going to talk about is posture. And having a good posture is really helpful for meditation practice. You can sit and meditate in a chair, or you can sit and meditate on the floor. And I'll talk about both. For sitting on a floor, the classic meditation posture is to sit cross-legged. What I recommend to people, unless you're very, very limber, is not to sit cross-legged at all, but to sit tailor fashion, a Burmese fashion, which is to have one foot in front of the other. So they're not actually crossed, you know, like this, right? They're like this. So like the one leg is on the floor in front of the other. See what I mean? And now it's very important for meditation if you can keep a straight back. In order to do that when you're sitting on the floor, it helps a lot if you have a cushion to sit on. And if some of you want to try sitting on the floor, there are some more cushions up there that you can welcome to go and borrow. If you have if you sit up on a cushion, then you can tip your pelvis forward, hips forward a little bit. It makes it easier for the knees to come down. And if your knees are touching the ground, they provide more support. If your knees are up in the air, then you're more unstable. Also, if you're up higher with your hips by sitting on a cushion, it helps tip your pelvis forward a little bit and helps create a little bit of strength in the small of your back. And it's a lot easier to sit up straight for some period of time if you have a little bit of strength, a little bit of curve in the lower part of your back. Not overarched, but just maybe a teeny bit more than the natural curve that should be there. If you cannot get your knees down when you sit this way, and you like to sit on the floor, then you can get something, another cushion or a sweater or something, and put it underneath your knees and support them. Like this. You know, sit up like this. And if your knees are too high up in the air, it might push your lower back out, which might be hard for your back. So you might want to sit up even higher. I've seen people with these amazing thrones, meditation cushion thrones, you know, three or four cushions high, and, you know, and two or three for their knees, and they're sitting like, you know, it looks great. Some people sitting cross-legged this kind of way doesn't work so well. Some people like sitting on benches. Anybody sitting on a bench? Yeah, Maureen is sitting on a bench. Could you lift your bench up? See this bench here? And that way you end up sitting on your knees. And that works very well. And so you're sitting like this, kind of, and puts less torque on some the knees, and some people like it more. If you have especially a round cushion, I don't have a round cushion, and you put it between your ankles when you're this way, and then sit back like this, it also works very well. And some people find it very nice to sit this way, sit on their knees basically, with some support underneath their torso. And so this is also a possibility. If you're sitting on a chair, the suggestion is that you have both feet parallel to each other. You certainly wouldn't want to cross your feet when you're sitting on a chair. You want to have parallel with both feet, soles of feet firmly on the ground. So you have this stability, this clarity, this strength, this rootedness there. Though some people like to have their legs apart, they feel more stable if they have their wider base on the chair. If you're sitting on a chair, it's important that your knees not be higher than your hips. Because if your knees are higher than your hips, then you're more likely to kind of push out your lower back, and it can get tired pretty quickly. And in fact, some people say your knees shouldn't even be parallel to your hips. Your knees should be slightly lower than your hips. So if you have long legs, you should get some pillows to sit on or something. Also, if you're sitting on the chair, it's strongly recommended that you don't use a backrest. Now, some people have to use the backrest because they have back problems or whatever. And so you're more than welcome to use the backrest if you need it. In fact, if your back is or some physical troubles are so strong you can't even sit up upright, you're welcome to do this meditation practice laying down. Like here's someone. There's an example. Sorry to point you out. But there, she seems happy over there. And there's a little bit of some techniques around laying like that that you need to, it's helpful to learn so you don't fall asleep. Mm-hmm. But that's a wonderful way to meditate if you have problems with your back or something. Now the reason for not using the backrest is that there's a very strong correlation between the outer life and the inner life, between our body and our psychological life. And to the degree to which this awareness practice is trying to cultivate an ability to be self-reliant, to have a self-reliant awareness, it's easier to discover that if your body is self-reliant, if you're not leaning against something, relying on something. So just sit out. Also, if you're leaning back into some kind of backrest, It might feel relaxed. And in the short term, maybe it's a little more relaxed than sitting upright. But in the long term, over the months that you do a practice like this, it actually makes it harder for some of the muscle groups in your torso to relax deeply. I don't know if this is a good example, but you know, if you're always like this, tense in your shoulders, and then you're bent over like this too, the shoulders don't have anywhere to go to relax. But if you sit up straight, they have a long way to go. There's more space for them to relax more deeply. So in the same way, if you lean against the backrest, it's actually a little bit harder for some of the deeper muscles in the body to relax in the same way as you can if you're balanced and gravity helps you. Now, if you're sitting either on the floor or on the chair, if you take your fists, your hands, either side of your hips, onto your chair or onto the floor if you can reach, and push yourself almost off so that your chest comes out and you're all kind of all just hanging there on your, by your hands. And then as you release your hands, let your shoulders roll back. And perhaps if you do that, you feel your shoulders are more hanging and you feel more open in your chest. And probably you feel more, at least your torso might feel more alive, more awake than you were before. A little bit more energized. Is that the case? What we try to do here is take a posture that expresses alertness. We're trying to pay attention. We want a posture that's alert. People all have a very strong association with meditation as being something that's calming and relaxing. Calm and relaxation is a very important element to meditation, but if that's all meditation is about, it's kind of a dead end. And it's very important to also cultivate an alertness. And one way to do that is to have it, to do it physically. Just take a posture that allows you to feel kind of alert and present. The hands, we do anything with the hands where the hands are comfortable, kind of symmetrical. The classic way in Buddhism, the classic thing in Buddhism, what to do with your hands is to have the hands together in what's called the mudra, one hand on top of the other, and with the thumb tips touching like this. And then having it it kind of in front of your belly, just below your belly button, kind of. So that's a classic way. You don't have to be classic. I usually sit this way, with my hands on my thighs, like this. And I'm quite happy this way. Some people like to have their hands together, but resting down on their ankles. The thing is that if you have your hands on your thighs like I do, or if you have your hands down on your ankle, sometimes the shoulders get pulled forward. It can create a strain here in the shoulder. And also can pull your whole body forward a little bit. So be sure to bring your hands far enough back so that doesn't happen. Or if you have your hands together like this, some people like to have a sweater or a pillow or something to put here so their hands are held a little bit higher, like this. And that's allowable. Almost always in posture instructions, there's instructions about what to do with your head, as if your head isn't just right the way it is. The head is supposed to be balanced, the neck and the neck on the shoulders. And one classic way of describing that is that ears are supposed to be lined up with the shoulders. And what happens sometimes in meditation, if you get sleepy, you go like this. Or sometimes if you start thinking a lot or anxious about something, the chin goes out, and, you know, going forward like that. Sometimes people's heads turn like this. Sometimes they go like this. So the idea is to have it balanced. A classic instruction also is to take your chin and tuck it down and back. It's said that if you do that, it tends to control the thinking mind. You'll try it, and you won't believe it. But I think what's maybe better than tucking the chin down and back is to, it has the same effect, but it doesn't involve pulling or tightening. And that is to open up some space between the last vertebrae in the skull. Open that up a little bit. And you probably find that your chin kind of goes down and back also. But it's more like an opening movement rather than a pulling down movement. In our tradition, the usual instructions for the eyes is to keep the eyes closed. It's usual. is not required. There are some Vipassana teachers who teach people to meditate with their eyes open. There are some Buddhist traditions which stress it. That's really what you should do, is meditate with the eyes open. But we meditate, general instructions to meditate with the eyes closed. And if it works for you, any of you, please, I recommend you try that and try it that way. And the final thing about posture is it's nice to keep the mouth closed. And some people like to keep the teeth touching. Some people like to put the tongue up against the roof of the mouth in case they need something to do with their tongue. And again, it's also in the classic ancient text, it says if you have your tongue up against the roof of the mouth, it controls the thinking mind. And maybe it does. So that's the basic points of posture. Does anyone have any questions about that? Or details you'd like to hear more about? Yes? If you've done any kind of practice you've done for a long time, becomes kind of a habit.
Yeah.
And so certain kind of meditation habits are useful to break if you're going to do mindfulness practice. So for example, if someone's been doing a concentration practice a lot, then they need to kind of somehow, or mantra, or visualization, they have to kind of learn somehow to put that to rest so they can do the mindfulness paying attention practice. And also some people have learned kind of yogic breathing techniques in meditation. They breathe particular ways. And when we do mindfulness meditation, we don't try to do it, we just basically try to be natural. Or normal. We don't try to do anything special, like breathe specially. We just let our breath be the way it is. And so with our eyes also, we don't try to do anything special with our eyes, focusing on anything particular or looking at something, like a third eye area. We just try to just let the eyes rest and be at ease, not trying to do anything in particular. And so what we're trying to do in this practice is to discover deeply, have deep insight, deep seeing what's going on in the conditions where things are just as they are, without trying to manipulate or change or make something happen. And often, other meditation practices often emphasize trying to make something happen. And it's all quite wonderful. In mindfulness meditation, we're not really trying to make something happen as much as we're trying to see very deeply. Okay, anything else? Yes?
How do you avoid falling asleep? I usually fall asleep and then I get awakened
by
the sound of my own
snoring. Ah, lucky you. Your own wake-up bell. We'll talk more about it maybe next week. One of the things you can do if you know you're falling asleep or getting tired, then it's a really good time to meditate with your eyes open. And also, it's also a really good time to emphasize having a really good posture, straight, upright posture, have some more energy in your posture. So for now, why don't you just do that, eyes open and sit up straight, and we'll talk more next week about it.
Today you can sleep.
Some people like to sit with more bright lights, like if sit near a bright light so that with their eyes closed, so the bright light comes into the over through the eyelids, can help bring some alertness. I like to, and I sometimes to wash my face, my neck, my hands, and my feet with cold water before I meditate if I'm sleepy, and that kind of brings some vigor. Okay, so we should try all this now in meditation. But you've been sitting for quite some time, and it might be nice for you to stand and stretch for a minute or so, if you'd like, please. So then if you could take a alert but comfortable posture, meditation posture. You might even do this little thing with your hands on both sides of your hips and lift yourself up and let your shoulders roll back a little bit. And then gently close your eyes. And before we look, in that kind of stop and look idea, it helps to stop. And one of the ways to stop and remind yourself you're going to be here is to begin by taking a few long, slow, and deep breaths. As you breathe in, to feel a connection to your body. To remind yourself that here and now, this is where you are in this body at this time. And then as you exhale deeply and fully, to the best of your ability, see if you can let go of thoughts, preoccupations, concerns. Deep, long, full breaths, kind of cleansing breath. Empty yourself a little bit. And then you can let your breath return to normal. And as I said, we don't make any special effort to breathe any particular way. Just breathe whatever way you happen to be breathing. It's also quite helpful in the beginning of a meditation session to scan through your body to notice where there might be tension in your body. And then as you exhale, to soften or relax the tension. So for example, to start at the top, you might feel your forehead and eyes. If there's any tension there, as you exhale, let it soften. Some people carry a lot of tension in their jaws, so you might feel your jaws a little bit. If there is a lot of tension in your jaws, you might try dropping your mouth open. And with your mouth open, then let your teeth float back together. Another place of holding is the shoulders. And even if you can't relax your shoulders, maybe there, as you exhale, there can be a softening around the tension. Might be tension in the belly. Belly might be held in. And if it's easy, see if you can relax your belly. Let your belly hang forward. I mean, some people are taught to hold their belly in all the time. Meditation, it's best to let your belly hang forward. So it's relaxed.